Blog Talk Radio.
All right, all right, all right. This is Leonard J. King in the house. This is the new year, 2023, and my show promises to have some amazing, amazing people. I've already got a waiting list lined up. And so today it is our privilege and our honor to have with us Mr. Bluesman. That's Ken Tucker. And so without further ado, let's bring him on our show and talk about his life, his music, and what's going on. This man has got it going on. He's a kick-ass, off-the-chain blues man. I've heard his music, and hands down, he's awesome. So without further ado, let's get him on the show and see what it's all about here. Hello, Ken. Welcome to Book Talk Radio. Are you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. How's it going?
It's going, buddy. Just had a little snow today, but other than that, everything's groovy.
Nice. Yeah. So let's get into this, the man, the myth, the legend here. Let's talk about your childhood, you know, how you grew up and things.
Yeah, I grew up in a little tiny town in Indiana called Sullivan. It's about 25 miles south of the huge metropolis of Terre Haute. And, I played music as much as I could when I was growing up. I listened to records. My dad had a lot of records of all different stripes, everything from Glenn Campbell to Johnny Cash to Buddy Holly, you know, Everly Brothers, all that stuff. And then my brother had Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, CCR, all that stuff. And I just listened to it all the time. And I wanted to be a guitar player. And so when a friend of mine decided to give me one of his guitars, I was like, I jumped on it. But, yeah, my childhood was just small town, hanging out with friends kind of stuff, you know, nothing big. I was a social butterfly. I pretty much stayed in my bedroom and played guitar most of the time.
Interesting. Highly interesting. So how did you get into music, actually?
Well, we also had a piano in our house, and my mother played piano and clarinet. My dad was an art teacher, so we had a lot of art and music around the house, and I was interested in both. So, but I got it just from hearing it all the time. You know, my mother had all these records, and my father did too, and I was exposed to the arts pretty much early on. You know, my dad's idea of a good time was not going to a football game. It was going to a concert or an art museum.
I see. So here's an off-the-wall question for you.
Okay.
Is it difficult to play the blues on a guitar?
Well, I mean, it's like it's asking me if it's difficult to fix the car. I mean, I've been playing it since I was 12 years old, about. So, and my guitar mentor is a phenomenal blues player. So that's all I've been playing. Now I can say yes, and I can also say no. I mean, it just all depends on what you've been playing mostly your entire playing career, you know? I mean, if I was a shredder, and all I could do was, you know, sweeping arpeggios and crazy runs up and down the neck, then I would say, yeah, the blues are hard because you got to slow down. You know, but it's just something that's second nature to me. I love guys like Hound Dog Taylor and Freddie King and Muddy Waters and Willie Dixon and you know, especially like Howlin' Wolf, man, he's one of my heroes. So I really kind of digested blues music as much as I could.
I get it. Yeah, I play a little acoustic guitar, and usually I'll just pick it up after I break up with a chick, and there's been a lot of them. But other than that, yeah, I just, I punk around every now and then. So what made guitar especially attractive to you?
Well, I did like playing piano when I was younger, but I learned quickly that you just can't get a strap for the piano and throw it around your shoulder. But that was one reason I went to an instrument that could be carried. But secondly, you know, I got bitten with a guitar bug about when I was about 12. And my brother was playing an Eric Clapton album. And I heard that those beautiful screaming lead lines of his. And I thought, man, that sounds so cool. And that's what I wanted to do.
Nice.
You know, I did delve another field. You know, I did some classic rock, and I did a little old school punk for a while. But you know, other than that, I'm doing blues the whole time.
Yeah. Who were some of your early influences?
Eric Clapton, for sure. Larry Norman. I used to play for Larry Norman, but he was one of my heroes when I was getting into my formative musical years. Lennon, McCartney, George Harrison, all the Beatles on, you know, are influence on me. You know, the typical ones, you know, Hendrix and you know, the like. But when it comes to other influences, like songwriting influences, would be, again, Paul McCartney or Robert Johnson or Howlin' Wolf or Joe Walsh. I like Joe Walsh's writing, like ZZ Top's writing. Guitar playing, it all goes back to this straight rock and blues players, you know. One of my favorite guitar players is Greg Martin from the Kentucky Heathers. And I've had the privilege of becoming a friend of his over the years, and I think Greg's one of the finest players that ever walked on the planet. And, of course, my guitar mentor, Tracy Garcia, who I always give kudos to. The guy's a genius. But, you know, that's about a good start, I'd say.
Absolutely a good start. Speaking of starting, when did you start writing songs?
Oh, I was about between 18 and 20 because I wanted to, I liked the idea of playing my own music. Every band in town was a cover band, and 90% of them played the same songs, just with different band members. And so I started writing songs, and I tell you what, though, my first songs were so horrible that I began to refuse to play them in public. But I go by the Bob Seger theory of songwriting, which is you got to write crappy songs to get the good ones, and that's the truth. So go ahead and write the crappy songs, but that'll get you the good ones.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, Ken, where can our listening audience hear your music, buy your music, get in sync with your music? You got outlets?
Yeah, you can go to straight to the record label site, which is countzerorecords.com. And my catalog, along with other fine artists' catalogs, are in the website there. And you can find us separated by genre, which makes it easy to find me. It's either on guitar or blues. You know. Or you can just typically type in Ken Tucker Blues, and about 300 different random independent retailers that pop up on the search engine. So, I mean, it's easy to find my music. You know, I'm on Apple, and I'm on all the major distribution outlets. So, and Spotify, and so on and so forth.
YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah, YouTube. But you really can't buy me off YouTube. But if they want to go to my YouTube page and say they might want to hint, subscribe, it's just do a YouTube search of Ken Tucker Stormy Blue.
Yeah. So tell us, how did you get to play for Larry Norman?
I used to be in a band and play through Chicago a lot, the Chicago area. And we played once. We played with Coffee House in Gurnee on a regular basis, set by Chicago. That's where Six Flags is, for Chicago area. But the host became, the lady who ran the place became fans of my band. Her name's Lisa Weyerhaeuser. And she knew how much I loved Larry Norman. I had no idea she knew Larry personally. And they were good friends. So she wrote, called me and said one day, hey, Larry Norman is going to do a performance. We're closing the club. And he's doing our last performance. I just want to invite you up here and bring your wife. We'll let you in for free. And you'll get to meet Larry. And so I was like, yeah. And so I met him there. And we became friends. And I got him to do a concert for my church. And he said, as long as you, your band opens for me and you play in my band before after I do a solo thing. That's, that sounds great. And so he loved the band. He loved my band. And Lisa, I invited Lisa to come along because she's a musician too. So she played, you know, that night with us. But after, to make a long story extremely short, he was going to sign our band to his label, but really my band was breaking up just because they were tired of being, you know, and they all had full-time jobs and all this stuff. And they didn't want, they just did this for fun, opening for Larry for fun. But he goes, well, I really didn't want your band. I really want you in my band. I want you in my band because I like your playing. I like your songwriting. And so I said, that's fine. They're, you know, they're, we're not going to do anything anyway. We just kind of let the whatever deal he had with us just kind of, you know, run its course. We just did a couple of recordings with him, but he just started using me for shows all the time. And there's another guy, a friend of mine from Indianapolis, Herbie Manapudi. We're the two Indiana guys that played for Larry just recently. And, you know, he, so him and, you know, whenever Larry came through the Midwest or even like Pennsylvania to, say, Missouri, or Michigan, stay down to Tennessee, he'd give us a call if he wanted, you know, Herbie and I, and sometimes Lisa to come and sit in with him. And so we did a lot of shows with Larry that way, and I was also in, on a couple of live CDs. That's basically a meeting that Lisa Weyerhaeuser set up because she wanted me to meet Larry and she wanted Larry to meet me.
Nice. And also there's a mention of you were featured on Dan Aykroyd's show. That had to be awesome for you, too.
That was crazy. Yeah, here's how I found out about it. I was on tour in Minnesota, and we just played a festival gig. It was late night, and we got, and my dad was with me, my dad and my son. Got back to the hotel, and I went to bed because I was tired. I played all day in the hot sun. So next morning, I wake up to check my email, and I get an email from my old record company telling me that I had been chosen as the Blues Breaker Artist of the Week for August 18th and 19th of 2007 on House of Blues Radio Hour. And I said, he said, that was, did you hear it last night? I said, last night I was at a show. Well, I played last night, and first I didn't believe him. I called him a lying piece of garbage, but he said, no, really. So I did a Google search, and I did find it. But I looked for, I don't know how many years, for an archive of that particular program. I could never find it. Finally dawned on me, hey, if I email House of Blues Radio Hour and say, hey, I was Blues Breaker Artist, blah, 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 could you send me an archive? Maybe they'll do it. And so I just took a chance and did that like 3 minutes later. They said, yep, here you go. And they sent me a link. But I waited 5 years for something I could have done in like an hour, you know, between emailing them and them emailing me back.
You were involved in a terrible accident. Can we talk about your accident and your recovery?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, well, it was May 12th, of 2021. And I was just, honestly, I had to keep forgiving myself for this. I was driving under the influence of alcohol and Xanax. And I blacked out for I don't know how many, several hours. And the last thing I remember before waking up in the hospital was sitting on the sofa drinking these beers and taking the Xanax in the recording studio. And then seems like a very, very, very long sleep. I wake up. Next thing I remember, I'm waking up in a hospital with some guy in scrubs and a face mask and a face shield looking down at me saying, "Mr. Tucker, do you know where you are?" And I'm thinking, "Yeah, I'm thinking the hospital." He said, "Yeah, you're in a really bad car wreck," and he went through my litany of injuries. And that's when my son walked in and said, "Dad, you've been in a coma for 6 weeks." And I looked down and said, "Yeah, no, I haven't." And my wife walked in and said, "Yes, you've been in a coma for 6 weeks." And so then I got a lot of love from my fans in Europe and Asia and so on, and some in America. But most of my fan base is European and Asian. And when I was in the hospital, I was getting just all these sweet messages from my fans over there. My record label is very supportive. Count Zero Records was awesome to me during this time. And I want to thank George and Meg for that. But I'm still, I went through the whole physical therapy thing and, I, you know, whatever I could do. But there's only so far I'm going to be able to heal. And I think I've reached that point. And I've just accepted the fact that I'm not going to be able to walk like I used to. I can walk, but I need a cane for long distances. Walking around my apartment, if I go without it, I feel like I'm a pirate because I got a peg leg, you know. But I learned to accept the fact that, you know, I did this to myself. Thank God no one else was involved, just me. And I've been sober since May 12th of 2021 because I'm not drunk anymore and I don't want to drink anymore. And it was truly one of those once-in-a-lifetime wake-up calls where you know that this could have ended a lot worse than it did. And I just truly think God had mercy on me and God allowed me to live. And I'm grateful for that.
I understand. We have a – some of us get it, you know, and some of us don't. And it usually goes from bad to worse. But yeah. It sounds like you had an eye-opening experience, which is good and bad, but you're okay now, right?
Yeah, I mean, as far as internally, you know, for a big guy, I'm really healthy. My blood sugar is normal. My blood pressure is low. My heart rate's normal. I'm just kind of gassy. Otherwise, I'm really healthy.
So
I just can't walk very good. But that's the price I pay for being a moron.
I hear you loud and clear. Been there myself a couple times. And I'm a slow learner. But when I get it, I finally get it.
I'm the same way, brother.
So has that affected your remarkable skills at any way, shape, or form?
Well, I don't know how remarkable my skills are. I've had a few remarks about it. I'm still getting my hand back a little bit, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. You know, I went out and played a little bit with some friends on stage about a week ago, week and a half ago, and it went pretty good. I mean, it felt good to finally get back out there and playing some music in public again, and it felt really good. I mean, I just, you know, it's like riding a bike or, you know, whatever. Once, you know, you can get off the bike for 10 years and you get back on it, you just like, you know, from yesterday. And that's how I felt. I felt like it just, I knew that I'm still working, you know, still trying to get, I got about 95% of my hand back from playing. And that's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, you're quite the humble dude, dude. I've heard your music, and you're off the chain American badass Mr. Blues, I'm saying.
Yeah, your check's in the mail, Lawrence.
Nice. Nice.
I appreciate that very, very much.
That's what we want to hear. So going forward, let's talk about, you know, a documentary, a biography. You going to write a book or something one of these days? Or?
No, I'm having a book written about me by another person. And then we're working on a documentary with Clean Slate Films, cleanslatefilms.com. And we're trying to raise funds to do it right, you know, to get the proper promotion and proper production of the documentary. Just make sure it looks good, and because there's lots of interest in the story, you know, my life story for some reason. But they want to do the story about me, and then if any people that are listening would like to help out to bring this documentary to life. It's basically about how I grew up being tremendous. You know, I was a fat kid in school, and I was being bullied, and just I was felt like a complete outcast. So what I did was just pour all of my anger and frustration and loneliness and bitterness into my music and learning how to play. So instead of walking around, you know, I didn't want to walk around whining about it. I did. I didn't want to, but I did. But part of dealing with the whole thing was just taking out all my anger and frustration on my guitar. And of course, my family didn't appreciate it at the time as much as I did. But, you know, they're pretty supportive. But that's what the documentary is about, overcoming obstacles and not letting anyone determine for you or tell you what you can and can't do. You know, it's just, and I decided once I got out and went, you know, out on my own, I wasn't going to be anyone's doormat anymore. And I just told the people who told me I couldn't do it to, you know, take a flying leap. And I did it anyway, you know, and I just was tenacious about it. And that's what we're trying to portray with the documentary is what, you know, if you feel downtrodden and you feel like nobody cares or no, you know, whatever, start believing in yourself because it's your life to live, not theirs, you know, and you determine what goes on by the way you react to adversity. You know, if you look at adversity as woe's me, then you're not going to get anywhere. But if you look at it as an opportunity, then you can go a long way. And that's what this whole documentary is about. And the same thing
Absolutely.
About the book. He's done a couple articles on me for a newspaper, and we just discussed it just in, you know, kind of like talking, yakking after we got done with the interviews. And he said, yeah, I think this would be a cool biography. I said, hey, why don't you write it? Okay, I will. So he's writing a biography, and we're talking to my record company about publishing it when it comes out.
Nice. And your record company, where's that at the moment?
They have two offices, one in Croatia and one in Austria.
Sweet.
That's why I have more fans in Europe and Asia and South America and Africa and Japan than here. That's their market over there.
I got you. You got
they
that.
Want me to come back with them.
Got that Go international flair going on.
Well, international doesn't necessarily mean household name famous. You know, it just means like I got good distribution and good promotion with a good product.
You surround yourself with good people and you get good results. And but yeah, I just they want me to come and do a tour in Croatia and Austria and parts of France and Italy. And the guy who owns a record company also owns apartments in Croatia right on the Black Sea. And so he was going to set me and my wife napping there for 3 months, and I was going to do two shows a day for 6 days a week, two to three shows a day for 6 days a week. And we're kind of still working on that. You know, we're trying to still I'm looking at plane tickets prices for next year for Zagreb so we can go over there and start working this tour out. But that's why I love my record label being in Europe. It gives me reason to go over there.
Absolutely. So I'm guessing that's part of your future plans, and you have other plans for the future?
Absolutely. Yeah, I put us up in the apartment on the Black Sea. It's definitely in the plans. That's why I'm looking at plane ticket prices for next year, because I turn 59 next year. Oh, my God, I turn 59 next year. And my wife and I haven't been out. We've been married 34 years. The last real vacation we had was our honeymoon. And I want to do something special with her. And, of course, she's a penny pincher. And I keep saying, dear, money will come back. Time will not. So let's just bite the bullet, do something, and and damn the consequences. We'll deal with the consequences when they come. Because we got to do something. You're not going to get this time back. We're young. Let's enjoy it. We're young. I say young. I'm middle-aged. We're middle-aged. I want to be able to enjoy this while we have our physical health and our mental health. And so I'm kind of working on her. And it's going to cost a lot. And I see. Maybe. So I got to maybe now. So I'm going to push that maybe just a little bit every day. So I get to okay. And then we're going to buy the ticket.
Absolutely.
I have a plan. I have a plan, man.
So let's plug this again, where the people, our listeners in the good old U.S. of A, can listen to your music, buy your music. Where can they get it, all that?
They can go to CanalZeroRecords.com, and I'm on the website. It's the website for the whole label, but you'll find me on there. And it's, you can buy my stuff from them, or Apple Music has download capabilities among the Spotify, all the major distribution and download and streaming outlets have my music. And but if you want to buy the actual project as a whole, I got three of them currently being offered through the record label. And so you just contact the record company through CanalZeroRecords.com or Google search Ken Tucker Blues. And you'll find me either way.
Sweet. You have a connection in Australia, Almost Blue Radio Show. I'm going to forward your information to my guy and get you on that show as well. And so,
you're my new hero.
It's been a real pleasure, Ken. We're coming to
right
the
on,
end.
Man.
I mean, we could talk all night because you're just the most interesting person. But time is permitting otherwise. So, with that being said, rock on, bro. I appreciate you being on my show today.
Well, anytime, man. It sure was enjoyable, and just feel free, if you ever want me back on here, I'll be right there.
Guaranteed. We're going to make that happen in the future.
Right on, brother.
So, with that being said, this is Lawrence J. King out of the house. You've been listening to Ken Tucker, Mr. Blues Man. He's a badass blues player. You might want to get some of that. Later on, people. We'll catch you next week. Bye now.